Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. You're listening to Cats with the Dish. I'm John Katzlamitas. I write for the Las Vegas Sun and LasVegasWeekly.com, a little column we call the Gadget Report. I also write for all the other Greenspun Media Group titles, except when I'm bored and then I watch SportsCenter highlights. Dishy, how you doing? This is Tricia McCrone, ladies and gentlemen.
My description could best be said as bitter party of one. Because
my
as predicted last
be
week,
bitter,
bitter party won. As I predicted, as we knew last week, yes, LeBron won his championship ring. And am I happy about this? No.
The absolute absence of any kind of energy behind what you're saying.
I understand
is
that
bracing.
Exactly. What? I know this is exciting stuff here, but I graciously concede to the fact that Cats put out a bet very, very early on, and I had every NBA team out there.
You had every
and,
one of them.
And Cats won the bet fair and square, and I do owe him a wonderful Barrymore lunch, but it's going to have to be postponed, actually, though, a little bit.
For
because, yes, kind of like last summer, as this will be our last host chat we will be together.
Until late July?
Late July, yeah. So actually, okay. We will be, the two of us, we'll still have host chats every week.
Yeah.
But I will be phoning in from my vacation abroad. Not abroad, in the United States.
Ian, you won't be abroad.
I'm always abroad, but I won't be like in Europe.
Our vacation a chick, man.
Yeah, I'm abroad, but I'm not
leaving
the country.
Montana beckons.
Yes, it does. My Montana summer take two. And as you know, and I'm sure we will see you at some point there this summer. And
I am. Yeah, I need to do that.
It's
for a lot of reasons.
It's Eat, Pray, Love summer. As last year, I believe I called it my Eat, Pray, Love of food and alcohol is what it was. So I'm going to try to set restrictions and maybe not go a little as overboard as I did last time. But I am really, I'm so looking forward to it. But I'm going to miss you on the drive because once again, Ann Margaret's going, my Rhodesian Ridgeback.
And the only difference between Ann Margaret this year and Ann Margaret last year is about 95 pounds.
Exactly.
I was looking at photos of that trip, you know, the drive up we made last year.
She's like on your lap while you're driving, kissing
she's
you.
She's licking our faces and walking around the back. This dog is
97 pounds.
Yes. at this airing.
Yeah.
And she could have her own show at the end of this.
Exactly. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. And she will only ride in the driver's seat of my car. So I'm not sure that my friend that is driving with me, because you couldn't, and we'll explain why you couldn't in a little bit. You couldn't make the take two
I
trip with me. Is
that
so I will miss you on the
likewise.
Trip.
Likewise. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so it's she's going to have a harsh awakening in the fact that she's going to finally sit in the back seat. So this is all going to be I have a feeling it's going to be a comedy of errors starting tomorrow. But I'm excited about it.
And we've got a long way to go.
Oh,
and
gosh.
A short time to get there.
I'm thinking, like, should I get like audiobooks on tape or something like that? Maybe that will help me. But
I don't know that there is any remedy for a 14-hour drive other than just resign yourself to the distance. I've taken a lot of those types of trips, through Idaho, and you just kind of get into a different kind of frame of mind.
Yeah, we were very we were very compatible when we did it last year.
Yeah, last year's trip did not seem that long.
You did a little. Oh, you did the majority. It wasn't split in half. It was more like 64, 65, 35, something like that.
The word problem would be 10 of 15 hours.
Okay, so
I
you
did two-thirds.
You did two-thirds of it.
And,
and
did
then
one-third,
and then I did.
Which was fine to do. I liked it.
And then I did the end part of it.
Yes.
So it was very. Because I knew the area, obviously.
The victory lap.
Yeah. So it was. We did it fairly seamlessly. Like I don't recall thinking that it was a difficult trip. But now that there's going to be four dogs in the car, and Anna Margaret is now almost 100 pounds, I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot more stops.
Right.
And my friend who is driving with me is not the caliber of quickness in the driving that you are. I'm just going to say we may be seeing the speed limit when she drives. So
no.
I have a feeling I'm going to be doing more of the driving.
Uh-huh.
But so other than
really?
That, so it may take a little bit longer this time, but I will miss you. And
yeah,
I can't say I'm not happy to be going. But let's talk about, we actually had a fun night last night. This is actually Wednesday. The show's going to air on Friday, but Wednesday, we had a great night.
The night in question is Tuesday. We went out to see the sixth anniversary officially, And last real media opportunity for Phantom, the Las Vegas Spectacular at the Venetian.
And you know what is funny is the last time I saw it was at the 5th anniversary.
Yeah, it was a year ago. That's the last time I saw it, too. And was that the one where everybody's wearing the masks? Did we wear the masks? It was at the 4th anniversary.
No, last year was the one where it was a much more monologue at the end by Anthony Crivello.
AC broke out a little Groucho Marx.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... And he did a little of that last night.
Yeah, I think after last year, they were like, cut it down.
Gigio.
Yeah, they made him cut it down a little bit. But it was funny last year.
It was funny this year, but less funny.
Because there wasn't as much of it.
It wasn't as long. But he was doing little Sullivan and in the Phantom Mask.
And it still is a incredible show. Mm-hmm. So those of you who haven't had a chance to see it or you want one other opportunity to see it, you better do it quick.
They say a lot of things about the show, you know, that it had a nice run in Las Vegas, and it did. But I know that the people in the show and the people who produced the show really wanted this to be in that theater for perpetuity. And, it's too bad it just had to close. It's
a
very
gorgeous.
Expensive show.
And there will never be another Phantom of the Opera that looked like that. Because I've seen it in Toronto. I've seen it in London. I've seen it on Broadway. And nothing compared to the beauty of the set and just the way everything was done. I mean, and I actually preferred the shorter time.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't a lot of the reprisals and stuff like that. Reprisals, however you pronounce it. But it was, so I mean, I so much enjoyed that I'm very sad to see it go. And I'm also very sad about how many people that are employed that are no longer going to be employed. And hopefully they will move on to, you know, bigger and better things. But, and I hope that a lot of the talent that's in the show does stick around.
I hope all of that, what you just mentioned. And I think we're going to lose a little something when that show closes in this city, a little of our artistic merit.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. And you look at Plaza Venetian and then, you know, Jersey Boys leaving. I mean, I love Paris. I love everything about the Paris, but I preferred Jersey Boys at the...
Did you really?
I preferred seeing it at the Palazzo. It's still a fantastic show. It's one of the best shows in town, no matter where you see it.
It plays a little differently in that theater. It's a little wider stage. And, it might be kind of a nostalgia thing for me, too, because that's where I first saw the show. And
me, too. Yeah. And, maybe that's it, too. Yeah.
You know, I think it has that feel, though. I think the theater was...
And I liked the little cushy seats that they had down in the VIP area. Those were fun.
The little cushy seats.
Okay, yes. I was just a princess there. And then we went to a great party with a former guest of ours, Tiger Martina, who is... choreographer and director, right, of Vegas the Show.
Vegas
they had
the
show. Their 2-year anniversary, and that was David Sachs was there, Tara Palsha, Reva Rice, I mean, on and on. Yeah, Natasha, Eric Jern Young.
Everybody in the show was at the party. And it was a great time over at Tiger's house. It was a very retrofitted home.
And people people were in giant balls on the pool and in hamster contests. Like, it was crazy. People walking around giant balls in the pool. That's all I can say.
There was a crazy with a K photo booth.
It was fun. It was fun.
Wacky crazy.
But let's really quick before we talk about our show, because I want to give a little bit of a plug to you here, Katz, is that our guest is actually, you will not hear me at all on the show, which is a blessing for most of our listeners, that I will not be part of the actual interview. But this is an interview that you did with the incredible actor, comic, Martin Short.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, so many iconic characters from Saturday Night Live and films and television and
SCTV
everything.
SCTV before that.
Yeah. And and you, I know we can't give anything away, but that people should go see Martin Short.
People should see the show Friday and tonight and Saturday night.
Yeah, because, and all I'm just going to say is that one of us, the one with all the testosterone, you may see some special things in regard to one of us. That's all I'm going to say, because I think that's all I'm allowed to say.
It'll be different.
Just make sure that you keep your eyes open.
Okay. It's going to be different. That's all I can tell you.
So I will miss you, Katzie.
I will miss you too, but I will see you soon.
Yes.
And so stay tuned for Martin Short. But first, the great Josh Bell. Stick around. I know we will.
Viva Las Vegas. Hi, this is Pangelina Panatelli. You're listening to Katz with the Dish. Of course, I've been known to lie.
Yeah! Oh.
Laurie, hey, you're home early.
This place is a wreck. Who are these girls?
You know, they're hookers, so it's fine.
What the hell is this?
Oh, my God, where are my manners? Laurie, this is Angelique, Heavenly, Shireen, and Sauvignon Blanc.
That's Mila Kunis and Family Guy creator Seth MacFarlane in MacFarlane's feature film debut, Ted. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's new in theaters this week. Ted features co-writer and director MacFarlane as the voice of the title character, a teddy bear who came to life thanks to the childhood wish of his owner, John, played by Mark Wahlberg. John and Ted hang out smoking pot and watching movies all day, but John's girlfriend, played by Mila Kunis, has decided that he needs to grow up and move on. It's a familiar romantic comedy setup infused with McFarlane's trademark vulgar jokes and lazy pop culture references, which are only sporadically funny. The story is disjointed and ultimately unoriginal, with a whole kidnapping subplot that seems like it belongs in another movie entirely. I give Ted 2 stars out of 5. Also opening this week is Magic Mike, with inventive director Steven Soderbergh trying to infuse some creativity and life into a movie about male strippers starring Channing Tatum.
So I don't know, I'm just trying to figure out why stripping, I don't know.
Why? It's easy.
What do you mean it's easy? What do you mean?
You want some stripper wisdom?
Okay.
Women, money, and a good time.
Soderbergh's creative shot composition and off-kilter pacing elevate some of the story's prosaic elements, but he doesn't take enough narrative or stylistic chances with the material, and he ultimately can't overcome the deficiencies in the writing and the performances from leads Tatum, Cody Horn, and Alex Pettifer, all of whom are seriously charisma deficient. I give Magic Mike 2.5 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and online at joshbellhateseverything.com.
I've been a fan of yours, not to be too gushy, but for a very long time, since the SCTV days, Jackie Rogers and that era. So it's sort of surreal for me to be talking to you and at a character now. But I do want to ask you what we're going to see in Las Vegas, first of all. What you've got planned? Is this going to be a version of Fame Becomes Me or something of that nature?
Well, there's elements of that, but it's really, I've always loved Vegas my whole life, and I always love going there, and I love seeing acts. You know, my parents used to take me there when I was, like, a kid, and they'd see Buddy Hackett and all these filthy comedians. And what I used to love is the sense that when a kid... There's something about Vegas that can create an intimacy, so that when you see someone there, I don't know what it is, you just kind of feel if they do it right that you've had a hang with them.
Yeah.
And that's what I kind of aspire to. I try to make it very intimate. There's a lot of improvisation. To me, the analogy is like a party with Marty. It would be like if you were having a party and I jumped in your piano, and I playing, and did 90 minutes. I guess, it's like me hosting Saturday Night Live, but I'm also the cast.
Right.
So all the characters, Jiminy Glick shows up, and Jackie Rogers shows up, and Ed Grimley and Frank will discuss who has style and who doesn't have style in politics.
Right. Is it...
impersonations, and I sing and dance, and, go to the audience and bring up guys and turn them into the Three Amigos. And,
no, man.
It's all very loose, and yet it's structured, but it is kind of like, and it moves, the screens are up, so there's sketches so that I can go and change,
right,
and become a new character. It moves fast, it's very loose, very improvisational, but the ultimate goal was to say, Jesus, that was fun, wow, and I also got a sense that I knew him, that I got to hang with him.
Right, is it a true one-man show, Martin? Are you going to have any musicians with you, or any...
No, I'm a piano player.
Piano player? That's it?
Yeah, that's it.
How did this gig come to fruition? I don't believe, if I have this right, I've been looking and looking, I don't think you've performed at least this type of show in Vegas before.
No, I never have.
Okay.
I do concerts all over the country. I do it, I never do tours,
uh-huh.
But I kind of have this, I always have this feeling that if you stay off the stage too long, then again, back to the theory of being loose and hanging, that when you get back on, it's way bigger a thing than it should be.
Right.
And so to me, it's almost like why people continue to work out,
uh-huh,
even though they have to take their shirt off in a movie. Why do they keep running? It's just to keep in always that muscle ready.
Right.
And of course, I've done Broadway many times. When you do that, you have to do 8 shows a week, and you have no life, and you lie in state like,
mm-hmm,
right, Brezhnev or something all day until you go on stage. But so doing shows like this, 3, 4, 5 times a month, keep you very limber, but also you have a life.
Right. Are you developing any characters that we haven't seen yet? Are you still doing that in your career? you know, the next...
You know, I just did a television special for CBC in Canada, which we'll syndicate down here, called I, Martin Short, Goes Home. And in that, there's, I'd say, 5 new characters.
Wow.
But I don't do them necessarily. You know, characters for me have always evolved the same way they started when I was a kid. You know, where you'd be in a class, you have an ear or an instinct to impersonate slash make fun of your teacher behind their back.
Yeah.
And to your friends. And that's the earliest form of character development.
Right.
And in a weird way, you can then take a character. I mean, even Ed Grimley was a character that was kind of based on my brother-in-law and also based on this guy I went to school with, who would always, like, take slides, and his voice would go up like that. And I'd say, hey, Robert, did you develop any of the slides you took? Well, because I had taken them, I didn't really need to develop them because I knew them. And so suddenly, it's not a big stretch going, I'm off, hey. And, you know, except that the hair develops, and that's in an abstract way. But so all these characters, I mean, I always am fascinated when I go out in life and meet, you know, different kind of the crazy guy who's doing your shirts. And he's not trying to be funny, but he's hilarious.
Yeah, unintentionally.
And so I guess I'm always, as an observer of life, still being in life, looking at characters, finding them hilarious, unintentionally, impersonating them behind their back, and somehow that evolves into a character.
You know, I feel like if you were to spend an extended period of time just in Las Vegas, like a month, you'd come out with, like... like a dozen new characters.
Oh, sure.
There's an Irving Cohen type around.
Hey, listen, I'd rather live in a life with characters than, you know, with premises, as we call them, than not, you know.
I know this is a tough thing to sort out, really, but it's like asking somebody who their favorite child, but is there a character that you really prefer that is just fun for you to play above all the others?
Well, I guess, you know, they are like your kids because they you created them, you know. So the analogy is appropriate. But I think that Jiminy Glick is a lot of fun only because it's all improvised.
Yeah.
And because Jiminy is the moron with power, he can come out and say the things that you couldn't say if you said them.
Right, right. Yeah,
you know,
he has a
time. And because he's preposterous, he has less credibility, so therefore he's able to say those things, you know.
Right.
And no one can say, how could you have said such a thing, you know. It's like, I was interviewing Mel Brooks once, and I said to him, what's your big beef with a Nazi? You know, no, I could not say that as myself, and Mel just looked, I don't know.
Which?
You know, I think there were rules.
Which rapper was it? I think it was Ice-T. Where Compton is located.
That's right, Ice-T.
Yeah, that was... I still think of that. That was quite a while. It was about 10 years ago,
yeah.
Probably. But I still remember that interview.
10 years ago.
It's like when you watch so much talk show... so many talk show interviews, you have to, at some point, just absorb some of the inanity of it all.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah, that kid.
And those people have staffs, and those staffs are nervous about screwing up their lunch order. I mean, that's what I love, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what would they be like without the staff? You told a story I was when I was reading up on you, when you were on stage with Steve Martin in Chicago, that I wanted to ask you about, where you talked about meeting Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, that's right.
Did that happen in Vegas? What were the details of that?
No, it happened in Los Angeles. I had Chevy Chase had invited me to be his date at this dinner. No, it wasn't a dinner. It was like you meet at George Slaughter, the producer's house.
Right.
Then all these celebrities get on a bus. And we bus over to the Greek Theater to see Shirley MacLaine Act 1, Frank Sinatra Act 2.
Wow.
And, you know, it was like Warren and Annette and Lionel Richie and Don Rickles and Gregory Peck were all on the bus. It was just, you know, the most eclectic random and Chevy. And then after we saw the show. It was great. And then we ended up back at George's for a post-party. And Dinah Shore said to me, hey, do you want to meet Frank? She was a big SCTV fan.
Wow.
And I said, yeah. So I went over to meet Frank. Oh, and then I went into Frank, and then I said, you have no idea how big a big a fan I am. And he looked at me and said, I think I do. That was it. Yeah.
The stock line. You interviewed one time somebody we both know. I don't know how close you are with him, but I've known him over the years and done a lot of interviews myself with him, and that's Jerry Lewis.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, a remarkable interview. That was another one several years ago, where I believe he had made his comments about female comedians.
I was the interviewer.
Yeah, and that was your interview. And,
we were in Aspen.
Yeah, and I'd since had my own
comments. You think, Jerry, we were almost off the stage.
And you gave him an out. You gave him a couple of ways to get out of that, but he was, when he has his opinion, it's his opinion. And I've had those moments with him also in interviewing him here in Las Vegas. Can you speak to a little bit about his influence and impact on your career? Because I don't know if people really realize how prominent a role he played in your development, maybe.
Well, he's a major influence. But not, I will say, truthfully, not just for me, but if you ask that same question to Steve Martin, or if you ask that to, Billy Crystal and Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think what Carrey did was that there was a loose insanity to his style that was so unpredictable, you didn't know what he was going to do. The other one that influenced me a lot in that way was Harpo Marx.
Right.
More so than Groucho, that Harpo would just leap on a desk and grab the pens and pretend he was flying an airplane or fall asleep on someone's back. That kind of absurdity and from left field of not expecting or even understanding what was happening is what Jerry would do.
Right.
So it was just the screams and the shouts and the smirks and also the characters. I mean, I just remember seeing Three on a Couch 18 times when I was a little kid.
Wow.
I mean, I just had a huge... I just thought his style, like Jonathan Winters, who another huge influence, was just so unpredictable. How could you possibly look away? And that's kind of, one of the elements of show business, particularly with 935 stations. Mm-hmm. How do you keep the audience not from switching that button?
Right.
What makes you watchable?
Yeah.
Worthy.
Do you see Martin, anybody who reminds you of you a little bit now that you're at this point in your career, coming up, maybe in the early phases of his or her career that kind of resonates with you?
I don't know. I mean, people come up to me and say things like, "I should pay you part of my paycheck," but I think that I don't know. I actually don't know how to answer that. There are a lot of people that are influenced by you, by something you've done or an attitude you have or a style that you do or a commitment that you have.
Right.
But it's hard to specify.
Right.
And in a way, it's self-aggrandizing if they're too good. You're saying, see, they're good because they're doing me. Kind of creepy.
You kind of take ownership of that career. Yeah, right. I want to ask you a little bit. I mean, this has become so prominent. I'm sure that this is a tiresome, probably, subject for you by now, but the Today Show appearance with Kathy Lee. The one thing I want to ask about is, in watching that clip, I watched it a couple times, is the expression on your face when she starts going down that line of questioning and imagining what must have been going through your mind when how to address this. What were you thinking when it became apparent that she was mistaken about your about Nancy and about about your
well, on one level, I kind of love that people talk about Nancy. I love the idea that
it's very touching. Yeah,
we spent 36 years together. We've raised 3 children. This idea that you're talking about your son's graduation, but you're not talking about I was opening on Broadway when she was taking the kids to the finals. So
wow,
I didn't mind that part. I think it was just, it was a complete and utter, she's a really, really sweet, lovely person, and it just had slipped her mind, or it was off the radar, or whatever there was no negative energy there. That was just a mistake.
Yeah.
People make mistakes, but I think that I was trying to protect her, because I knew that if I had said that on live and air, it would have been deeply devastating for her, and if you actually look at the clip, it lasts 25 seconds.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's quick, yeah. And the way that you talked about her in the present tense and apply, and in if you knew what was going on, it did work, and it was
actually... It completely worked. Listen, you know, when I was 12, my brother David died in a car accident. When I was 17, my mother died. When I was 20, my father died.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and kids never met any of these people, and they feel they know them intimately.
Huh.
So I'm a big believer that, you know, this is not something that's not going to happen to all of us, and it's important to just keep the conversation with them going.
Right. I thought it was very, very interesting, because I know you have in your... in your performance skill set, you've got a lot of ways to deal with that. You've got innumerable ways to get out of that with all of your character work and your ability to think on the fly, and you handled it the ideal way, just without even preparation. I thought it was really incredible.
Thank you.
I don't know. Do you think you'll ever get married again?
Oh, I have no idea. No idea. Doesn't even... it's all too soon, too odd.
Yeah. And how about Las Vegas as at least a recurring performance platform for you? Would you ever entertain, you know, an extended residency here in the Strip? Is there anything in the offing after these dates at the Mirage that you're interested in?
There's nothing blatantly in the offing. I don't know. I mean, to me, this is the grand, you know, not the grand experiment, but the grand experiment. No, I mean, it's like, you know, for me in my career, what I'm always searching for, you know, I'm 62 years old, I'm looking for, I could easily say, good night, everybody, no one would say that was odd. I think that I'm not looking to pay the rent anymore, but I'm certainly, it's even a greater pressure sometimes, you're looking to keep yourself intrigued by it all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why if someone says, hey, do you want to be on this TV series? I'd say, no, I don't think so. Would you like to do an arc on that TV series in 4 episodes? Oh, that could be fun. Yeah. You want to do a reading of that play? You want to do this and do that? I find the eclectic nature, I've always found the eclectic nature of my career more interesting than a solid run at something. Mm-hmm. So doing, you know, and I always view my life as a school year. I'm in grade 58 now. and I try to take the summers off, you know, kind of start back after Labor Day, take Christmas off. You know, I could still give myself Easter exams. And so symbolically, my school year ends, you know, the end of June, and then I go to my cottage for the summer in Canada.
Yeah, and there's no graduation. Of it.
No, there's no gradual. Now you keep failing. Like, I keep being
keep getting held back forever in seventh grade. All right, Martin. Well, I'll turn you loose. Honestly a real treat to talk to you, and I can't wait to see.
Thank you.
Can't wait to see what you do in at the Mirage. And I was.
Oh, cool. It's fun. It's very loose.
And
it is a body with Marty.
Yeah, and I have to.
Body with Marty. or it can be called Let Freedom Hum, whichever title you want.
I was one of those kids. I got to tell you, I was one of the only guys in my group who ever watched SCTV. I was the only one who really understood what it was all about, and I'd go to.
It was not for the weak.
Yeah, I'd go to my junior high and do impressions of, especially of Jackie Rogers, and they were honestly wanted to, you know, like Steve Martin says, give that kid a special test. I was one of those.
I hope it got your girl, though.
You know, it didn't hurt, actually.
Yeah, of course it doesn't.
It was so weird that people wanted to know more about you, but it was...
Because they want to nurture you.
Yeah, right. I always got the mommy types, but... all right, sir. Well, like I say, thank you for your time, and
my pleasure.
No harm done on the
I'll see you in Vegas.
We'll be here, man. I can't wait to see it.
Great.
All right, take care.
Thanks, man. Bye.